Government Committee to order. Good afternoon, members, and good afternoon, everyone and staff.
Thank you.
I am very honored to be in this chair, Senator Pappas, and looking forward to work with all of you in my new capacity of chair of this committee. Senator Pappas and I talk about how much I love this committee, and people probably don't know. I loved education, and I enjoy, of course, doing my work in education. But state government really has been my passion. I worked with the state for 14 years before I became a senator, so state government for me is absolutely important. And after I was given the list of all of the agencies that we have jurisdiction over, I thought, ooh, this is good. I believe there is a tremendous opportunity and a huge responsibility with this committee, but also a great responsibility. So thank you, members, for being here, and thank you for all of the work that you're going to be doing over the session on this. I think that Senator Pappas explained to me that we work in waves in this committee. It starts very slowly, and then all of a sudden all of these bills come to our attention, and then all of these bills that have provisions that are under the jurisdiction of this committee will come to our attention. So to start, members, we are going to do introductions. Yes, Senator Pappas.
Yeah, before you do introductions, I just wanted to say that this is a really important committee, and I think that people don't realize how important it is. And we do touch every part of state and local government. And I wouldn't turn it over to just anyone. And I think that you're a good choice because you do have a passion for this, and you do have a lot of creative and interesting ideas to bring to the table. And I'm happy to still be on the committee. When Terry Bonoff took over higher ed, she didn't want me on her committee. So thank you for letting me stay on the committee, because I do enjoy the work that we do. And I think we have a really good committee, and I enjoy working with everyone.
Oh, fantastic. Thank you, Senator. We are delighted that you chose to stay in this committee. I think that it will be so important for us to have your input and your guidance. You have a tremendous experience in the Senate, but also with this committee. And there are some things that I think we're going to be reviewing that you work with, Senator Ann Rest, and you know, on policies when they bring policies before us about committees and different rules that we put in place. We're going to be reviewing some of that, and I would welcome your input. So thank you for deciding to stay with this committee. I'm going to proceed to do introductions. We have been together, so we don't have new members, but I thought it would be important that we remind the public and ourselves about the work that we do and the areas that we represent. So we're going to go around the table and introduce ourselves, and then we're going to go over some committee procedures and jurisdiction, counties, and then to the presentation that we ask from the Department of Administration to on workforce-related issues.
So, Senator? I'm Senator Chris Eaton. I represent Senate District 40, Brooklyn Center, Brooklyn Park, and I, too, am very excited about this committee. I have I retired after 35 years with the state of Minnesota in healthcare, and I think that knowing this, the system is very helpful in this committee. So thank you.
I'm Senator Alice Johnson, and I represent District 37, which is out in Anoka County, covering the city, the whole city of Blaine, and half of Spring Lake Park and half of Coon Rapids. And I'm very happy to be here. I'm enjoying this committee. It's the first time I've been on the committee in my legislative career was this session.
Which has been how many years?
Well, I had 14 years in the Minnesota House and now 2 years in the Senate, starting on my third year.
Wow. Sandy Pappas from St. Paul.
Senator Kevin Dahl, Senate District 20, which includes parts of Rice, Le Sueur, and Scott counties.
Dave Thompson, live in Lakeville, and Senate District includes Lakeville, Farmington, and a large chunk of Dakota County right down to the Rice County border.
Senator Bruce Anderson, represent District 29. I have most of the Wright County and a smidgen of Rockford City, which is in Hennepin County. And I've been This is my first term in the Senate and was 18 years in the House.
Melissa Wickland, and I live in Bloomington, and I represent most of Bloomington and most of Richfield.
Senator Bev Scalzi, District 42, which is all Ramsey County cities, Gem Lake, Vadnais Heights, Little Canada, Shoreview, part of Roseville, all of Arden Hills, and all of Moundsview, all Ramsey County cities. And I also served on a Little Canada City Council for six terms, and then I served four terms in the House.
I'm Dan Hall. I represent Burnsville, Savage, and a little bit of Lakeville, as much as Senator Thompson was willing to give me. And Senator Wickland stole some of my area from Bloomington, so you take what you get. I'm glad to be here. I am the minority lead on this, and have enjoyed this committee. We'll see if we enjoy it as much now with your leadership as with Senator Pappas. A little competition here, you know.
That will be tough, but I'll do my best. I'll do my best, Senator.
My name is Blanca Martinez Gavina, and I'll be the legislative assistant for the committee.
My name is Cara Josephson, and I'm the committee administrator for the committee.
Stephanie James, one of the Senate counsel who serves the committee. I handle state government and veterans issues.
Hi, I'm Lexi Stengel. I'm the other Senate counsel on this committee, and I take care of all of the local government issues.
My name is Ryan Majerus, Senator for Senate Majority Research.
I'm Amy Stringer, I work for Senate
Go ahead and introduce yourselves. Pages and interns, too.
Okay. I'm Kate Casella. I'm an intern with Sendum, and I'm just observing today the first day.
Very good. Welcome.
I'm Gabe Berlovitz. I'm the committee page here.
Very good. Back.
Julie Byrell. I work for Senator Bach.
Jennifer Orr. I work in Senate Majority Media.
Wonderful. Well, thank you, and welcome, everyone, again. Today we're going to review some of the areas that we really need to remember with respect to our jurisdiction. And before that, our previous chair developed, I think, a list that I thought it was appropriate that we bring back, and would love to have your input if you think that there are some things that we're not covering with respect to our committee procedures and protocol. I am going to start on time, probably. You have heard this in many committees. We have very limited time. Right after we leave, another committee will come in. We have a lot of people who may want to testify, and they feel like they are being pressured to put testimony, you know, in very short periods of time, and they are not going to be happy with us, unfortunately. So there are a lot of logistics that we have to manage this session that really forces us to really adhere to this protocol and do some work ahead of time. So I would like to encourage you to do whatever you need to do to bring issues to our attention. If you have amendments, if you have issues that you want to bring to the committee, maybe we can begin to organize that ahead of time so that you would have ample opportunities to get feedback from members, and also make sure that we respect, you know, the presence of your testifiers, because they come all the way here, they park far away, they come all the way here, and then they have 2 minutes. And imagine how upsetting that is, that they have to do all of that work just to come here, and we give them a couple of minutes. So if we need to meet with them ahead of time, if they feel like, you know, they want to meet with you and me as a chair, I am happy to do that so that they feel like they came here and were heard by other members. And I encourage you, if you're a co-author of a bill and that's an issue that you're passionate about, to also please make the time to meet with testifiers and people that brought that to our attention. I think that will be it's very important to the people who are coming to work with us. So the list is in front of you. If you could just review it and let me know if there are some additions that you would like to make to that document, I'll appreciate it. Then next, we also have the list of the committee jurisdiction. This is really a document that is very important, and I encourage you to look at it. Really reflect about the task that we have been given and the important job that we have. These are all the state agencies that we are responsible for. One issue that I am going to be thinking about, if if members are interested in is committees that we can, you know, put in place, subcommittees. If you're interested in an issue that will demand a little bit more time and attention from our members, please let me know, and then we can think about doing that. I have not received many calls or have not been approached on veteran affairs yet, but I'm thinking that that's an issue that we might want to work on over the interim and find out what are the, I know Senator Papp has really encouraged me to pay more attention to that and devote more time to that. So I'm going to listen to her recommendation and figure out how I could work with you if you're interested in putting together some ideas. I would very much appreciate your input if we need a subcommittee to deal with that. Again, the problems with committees right now is just the meeting room. I don't know, you know, if we have a subcommittee, then we need to find you a place for meetings. And that's the only limitation. But hopefully that will not be the case in the future, and it's an area that I really want to pay more attention to. Same is true about reviewing rules and policies that I know that there's a lot of interest in this committee about figuring out how we can update some rules. I know that there's a lot of proposals that are going to be coming from the House that are going to be very exciting in that regard, but it requires a lot of time and review. So if you're interested in that area, I am very interested, and I'm going to be spending a lot of time on that. Please let me know. Please take a look at the list. I don't know if you have any questions. I'm sure I don't have the answers, but we have staff who will, so they'll be happy to answer any questions you may have with respect to this list. Questions, members? Senator Pappas.
I know that Senator Anderson had worked on some veterans issues before, and something that I'd always wanted to do when I was chair is to have like a Veterans Day. But there usually we didn't introduce bills early enough to be able to kind of coordinate that. But I think with the veterans community, you might have some suggestions as to when that hearing could take place if the chair was interested. And I think, don't the commanders have a list of bills that they're interested in? But I think that's, you know, it's very worthwhile to consider doing that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So we will be
I'm
doing
sorry,
some
I,
of
I
that.
I swear I turned it off. And it's Barb Goodwin called.
We will be following up on that. And Senator Anderson, if there is, you know, anything that you want to bring to our attention, we could block some times, you know, from this committee to entertain some ideas and input that you may have to put together that program. So that would be something that we can do collectively. Let me know if you want to take the lead on that. Then we also have a document that was put together by our research division on the organization of counties, cities, and towns, which is under our jurisdiction as well. I would like to encourage you to review this. This is a very interesting document, members, and I want to make sure that we reflect on the jurisdiction of this committee, because there is a trend taking place with respect to how states feel that the federal government is not responding to some of the needs that the states have, so they are moving forward very quickly to adopt policies to address those issues locally. Actually, that is happening with cities and counties and town halls. You know, we're doing the same thing, the same dynamic is taking place in multiple states. And as we move forward in that direction, it seems that there are some trade-offs in that process, that we kind of counties feel more empowered, cities feel empowered to do this thing with the local community. There's a lot of excitement, a lot of energy, and then they disconnect from the state and they lose some funding, or they lose connection with, you know, experts in those fields and those administrations. We feel some of that in the federal government right now, that some of the states that have moved away have lost some funding. They've moved, you know, they don't get the technical capacity, the training that they used to get. So there is a fine balance on really trying to figure out to what extent we maintain the integrity and the support that the state can provide to the cities and the counties, and yet continue to maintain that local authority that we have maintained over the past. This issue is going to be a very important issue for us in the future, and I want us to be aware that a lot of proposals are going to come our way to reflect on that, that the local authorities really want to maintain their authority, and then the state is saying, you know, we have an idea for you. So we are going to have to make that decision here in this committee as to where do we go with those recommendations. So be prepared for some of these very important conversations that are setting national trends. And we will entertain them as they come. There are some proposals related, for instance, to the Metropolitan Council that may come to our attention. We have a couple of bills that have been introduced, a couple of bills that were introduced in the House that are precisely about that. So we have a regional structure that was put in place to work on a region, and then the members of that council are saying, well, but we need input from the local authorities. So how do we balance that regional direction and kind of working for an entire region, but then giving that space and opportunity to the local authorities? Very important issue today. If you have any questions or any concerns that you want to share with me or any other member of the staff, please let us know.
I think it's me. I don't
know. Wow. That's worse than mine.
Sorry about that.
This song is going to be next. I have a life of their own.
Good thing it wasn't something.
I think we're going in turns here.
Madam Chair, I think we should turn our phones in before we come into committee.
Yes.
How did they do that?
Any questions on any of these documents? Any concerns? All right. So we're going to move into a very exciting presentation we have in our agenda today, and I would like to invite our testifiers to please approach the table. We have state management with us. We are incredibly excited about the news that they are bringing. You know that I was preparing all kinds of ammunition to come and ask the state, what are we doing to prepare for the workforce of the future? How are we handling the numbers? There are so many people retiring. I don't hear a plan. I don't know what is going on. And to my surprise, in just a week, I got bombarded with all of these very incredible, exciting information. And it's been just really a pleasure for me to receive these reports and to read about all of the strategies that are being pursued. And I was not aware of it. And I pay attention to this issue. So I'm going to venture to say that members may not be aware of all of the excitement and all of these ideas and all of these incredible strategies that are being pursued in our state. And I'm very proud to have really learn all of this and figure out a way to help you, because I think that you're going to, my assumption is that you are going to run into some barriers along the way that we put in place in policy for whatever reason, and we need to be prepared to support you in that direction. So welcome to the committee, Ms. O'Brien, and please proceed to introduce yourself and talk to us about these plans that you're putting in place for the state.
Thank you very much, Chair. I appreciate being here and to tell you about all of the work that we've been doing in these efforts. My name is Ann O'Brien, and I'm the Assistant Commissioner over Enterprise Human Resources at Minnesota Management and Budget. And I have with me today Kyle Uphoff, who is our data guru, as we like to call him, who has put together a lot of the information in the workforce report. You should have two documents. One is the actual workforce report for 2014, and then the other document has the same cover but is horizontal, and that is the copy of the PowerPoint presentation that we will go over for it with you. I'd like to talk about the executive branch workforce report that we've prepared and talk about the state of Minnesota workforce composition and also the demographic trends in state government and state employment. Most of my comments will talk more about state government excluding MinSCU. We do cover a lot of employment for Minsku, with Minsku, but because they have some of their own plans and some of their own governing bodies, we mostly exclude them. So we'll talk about that as we go through the charts. But we want to talk about what is happening then with those changes in demographics and how we are approaching recruitment and workforce planning, which isn't a new issue. We've been doing this for, we've been talking about this and working on this for the last 10 years or so, and building the state's employment brand, talking about how we are approaching talent retention, which is a critical to not only attracting talent, but also retaining that talent once it's with us, and then the technology and business process reengineering. So there's a lot to talk about today. The first slide is about the executive branch workforce and distribution by county of employment. I thought this would be interesting to you to see that we have employees in the state of Minnesota reporting to work in 87 of our 87 counties. 60% of those employees are in the 7-county metro area, and 40% are in greater Minnesota. So the executive branch workforce is distributed across the entire state, and we actually have a small share of employees that report out of state, specifically 36 employees that work in, I think, Washington, D.C., so the Department of Revenue. Most employees are at home to the state capital, and Ramsey County hosts the largest number of employees, representing 16,000 workers. The executive branch workforce highlights include, again, minus Minsku, total workforce of 34,639 appointments, which is not necessarily a headcount. That's the number of jobs. We have a female population of 50.3%, male population of 49.7%, so we're pretty close to even on the male and female population. Average age of 46 in state government, median age of 48. The average age of retirement is 62.1, and our employees at age 60, we have 4,660 employees at age 60 or over. We do have an average length of service of 12.5 years, so we tend to keep our employees for a period of time. That is reducing with the change in demographics for millennials tend to not stay in one place or one employee as long as the baby boomers did. We're finding a shift in that, but still have an average of 12.5. The challenge that we face, as everybody knows and we've been talking about for a long time, is as we prepare for retirements, how do we handle knowledge transfer from those individuals who have been with state government for a period of time, and how do we handle workforce planning, determining which jobs to fill. And again, that's something that every HR director and every person in state government, every supervisor and manager has had that conversation going forward. As they go to fill a job that's vacant, instead of just filling it directly with the same person that left that job, the same level of position, to talk about what is going to be needed in the future. And so there have been several agencies that have done workforce planning exercises to talk about what is the technology, how is that going to change in these jobs going forward. An example being we had at the Department of Public Safety, there were a group of employees who worked on photocopying drivers or license plate registration forms, and for years and years and years that was their job. And so when the time came and we had different technology and we wanted to downsize that job, how were we going to eliminate that function? So there was a lot of workforce planning ahead of time to retrain those individuals, to work with those individuals to see if they wanted to look at different positions. If not, were we able to change their skill level? If not, Were they eligible for retirement? What were we going to do with those individuals in those jobs? And how were we going to change those jobs? And what were the new skills needed for the new functions of the new systems that they needed? So those workforce planning efforts, instead of just refilling the job with the same skills with the same job classifications, are changing all the time. And when those changes happen, how are we going to be competitive in that new talent market? We've got to step up and make sure that state managers have the talent they need to continue to do the job, the jobs and the multiple occupations that we have in state government, so that they have the talent they need. The baby boom generation makes up the largest part of our state workforce, which is in the workforce report, and it's 45% of our workforce is 50 years of age or older. So people have to be prepared for that turnover. There's also a large group of state workers between 25 and 35 at currently make up 20% of our workforce. So the challenge ahead is to retain and develop members of that 25 to 35 age group to ensure that they can learn the and we can transfer that knowledge from one generation of workers to the next, and ensure that we maintain their interest in the new in the work, so that they can stay with the state of Minnesota for the long haul, and for a long period of time. And we want to make sure we have an environment that helps them want to stay with the state of Minnesota. This slide represents the state government full-time equivalents, or FTEs, per 10,000 residents as compared to the U.S. So you can see that we are competitive and efficient in have been with the U.S. Employers. And this is on our Minnesota Management Budget dashboard that shows how we compare with state other employers in the United States. And this data is as of, the employment data is of March every year, and the population estimates are of July 1st of every year, and higher education employment is excluded. And the data is based on the census data. For the next slide, which somehow got missed in our deck here, if you would turn to page 17 of your workforce report. It shows the characteristics of overview of the characteristics of the state workforce as compared to the Minnesota employed workforce. So that's all other employers in Minnesota. And it shows how we rank compared to all other employers, again, excluding MNSCU. So the slide covers four areas: persons of color, persons with disabilities, veterans, and then it also identifies our employees by gender. If we start with the top, the race not specified, you'll notice that gender, ethnicity, disability, and veteran status are data that's voluntarily provided by state employees once they are employees. So we collect two different data sets from individuals. We collect a data set when they are an applicant and a separate data set when they are an employee. So we don't, they have two different opportunities to provide that information. And employees may choose not to provide that data once they're an employee. A 9.1% of employees indicate that they are racial ethnic minorities, and 7.1% did not specify a race as an employee. There's several reasons for that. We believe that current reporting requirements only provide selection for one race or ethnicity, and we found that we've heard from several individuals that they would prefer to be able to identify more than one race. In 2017, we are obligated to report ethnicity to the EEOC every year, and we are obligated to report under their structure. And in 2017, they will be changing their structure so that we will be able to report multiple races. Individuals will be able to self-identify more than one race. So that we will be able to change in our system as of 2017, and we're hoping that that will make a difference on our reporting capacity. Also, persons with disabilities. Persons with disabilities represented up 4.7% of the workforce in 2014. Percentage in the employment is 4.8%. Veterans, one thing I wanted to say about veterans is that we're very proud of our work with the veteran population and employment. As you can see, we have 8.2% veterans employed in our workplace in state government and 5.5% employed in other employers in the state, so we feel like we're making exceptional progress there. We do also, I want to, in case you haven't seen it, we also publish every January a veterans report that talks about not only our employment of veterans, but our work with veterans during the course of the year and veterans programs. Every state agency reports the additional work that they do with veterans programs and other veterans initiatives that they do, return to work programs for returning veterans, et cetera. So that's also a good publication to read that we send to the legislature every year. And then the gender, as you see, again, is male-female, approximately 50%. Okay. Next slide is percent of executive branch new hires. This is a new slide that we've added this year to the report because we are have started initiatives to increase the number of racial and ethnic minorities hired in state government. And so this shows you that we are making progress with an increase of 2% in 2014 and almost 5% in the last 2 years. So we are making increases in that particular category.
So, Brian, if you could stop for just a second.
Yes.
We have a couple of members who have questions. Senator Pappas.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
And Senator
Hall. Ms. O'Brien, that's very, in just 4 years, that's very impressive because that's certainly, you know, a lot of us attended the One Minnesota Conference at the Humphrey where we talked a lot about the high age of state employees and that we're not really attracting many new people to come to our state, that we really have to grow our own. And a lot of these young people are of diverse backgrounds. And I've really been aware, my husband works for TSA, what a good job the federal government does in really incorporating people with disabilities, different ethnic backgrounds, with women and men and veterans and different ages into their workforce. So I was wondering what kind of strategies you've been using to have this kind of change over 4 years.
Madam Chair, Senator, we're going to cover that in a minute, but
okay.
We have several initiatives that we've been doing.
All right. I'm happy to wait.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Hall.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Ms. O'Brien, looking at that slide before this one, page 17, I was just noticing that the Hispanic Latino, the Black American, the Black African American, the Asian Pacific, the Indian, American Indian, Alaskan Native, employees with disability, all of those, if I'm reading it correctly, all of those, the private sector is employing more percentage than we as a government public sector. Can you explain why that would be?
Madam Chair,
Senator,
members of the committee, I can't explain that, except that that is why we have upped our efforts to look at this data and say that we need to do a better job of employing in these categories. We have fewer than the rest of the area. Do you have an answer? Excuse me for one moment. I have the director of Equal Opportunity behind me, and she.
You're welcome to invite her to come and.
Please.
She gave me the answer.
Okay.
I'm sorry. Being that we don't specify the race, and so if you added the. We have race not specified, which in the private sector is not an option. So that if you added those categories together with our race not specified, we believe that those would be more representative. But again, we have to wait until we can improve those numbers, and hopefully we'll do a better job. However, that certainly is a concern of ours, and that is part of our initiative to move forward and make those make our employment more representative of the communities we serve.
Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Anderson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. O'Brien, just wondering here, you talk about the veterans, and according to the report, you're 5% of the individuals that are veterans are disabled. What percentage of the veterans come from, as Senator Hall just mentioned, the Hispanic, Latino, Black, African American, Asian Pacific, American Indian, those persons of color? Do you have a breakout on that for veterans that are in that category?
Madam Chair, Senator, and members of the committee, I don't have that information available, but I could pull that information possibly. It might be too specific to be able to make public, but I could try to get that for you.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you. And Ms. O'Brien, in with respect to some of the questions, I have been asked a few questions with respect to some of the ethnic categories that we typically identify. For instance, you know, we have the African or Black or African American, and it just so happened that, of course, Minnesota has a significant African population. I just had a meeting with a constituent today who believes that we really don't have good training systems for IT, and he's an expert in that. And he explained to me how many of the refugees who came here his age had significant training in those areas, and he feels that he has all of these skills that he would like to use in the schools, and he's a volunteer, but he wants it to be more formal, the training that we receive. And so he was talking to me about his background, and he was trained in India and his travels and how he just had to learn that skill, and he was good for jobs, and now he has his own company in my district and everything. And it was a very interesting story, and I sometimes feel like these demographic groups do not capture some of that we can build on. What are some of the skills that these specific groups, you know, bring, and how we can build on that? So the same thing is true for gender and veterans. You know, all of these skills that kind of tie into ethnic and racial background or gender or capacity. So I don't know if this is something that we could continue to explore as we move forward.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, we are working on initiatives like that, and we have had some successes in some areas. Minnesota State Patrol has worked on taking individuals with interest in law enforcement and taking them through a law enforcement program, working with the colleges in Minsky to put them through a law enforcement program, focusing on protected group members who are interested in that program, and then increasing the number of protected group members, women and people of color, into that program. And they've had a great success with that. So they're partnering with the colleges. We've also had Summit Academy OIC working with the Department of Veterans Affairs and working with the HST program, the human services technicians, working with the veterans and their pharmacy tech, and doing internships and doing some training programs. So on an individual basis with some of the agencies, we are encouraging agencies to build programs with the different partnerships with different schools and different community groups. So that's certainly something that we're working toward.
That's good. Thank you. Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. O'Brien, just realizing, knowing all the different aspects of what veterans have to go through and in different categories that they work in, is there experience that they've had from being in the military, whether it's 4 years, 6 years, whatever the amount, is that, say they want to go into law enforcement with the state trooper or whatever, is that experience given in lieu of some of the requirements right now? That's, say, somebody off the street or somebody just going through a law enforcement school. Is some of that experience that they've had through the military kind of said, oh, you've already had that. We don't need you to make you do that. Is that being recognized?
Ms. O'Brien.
Madam Chair, Senator, members of the committee, yes, depending on the position, if that could be something that they can have in lieu of, certainly that's waived. In the case of the troopers, they take everybody through that training anyway, and they may have an opportunity to do better in that area because they've had that experience. But in some other categories where we do what we call experience and training evaluations, if they have had leadership opportunities or supervision, they would be credited for that work experience in lieu of other experience as well. Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you. Please proceed.
Okay, so now we get to the part about what are we doing about the changes, and what are we doing to address the issues going forward. The several challenges that we've already discussed, Enterprise Human Resources at Minnesota Management and Budget kind of drops into three categories, into three key areas of strategic focus: recruitment and pipeline development, to attract new talent to the state of Minnesota, retention, which ensures our environment is respectful, well-managed, and so that we can keep people here, and infrastructure, which includes the tools and technology and ensures that we have the structure behind to make it all work. First area is in recruitment and pipeline development, and we have created a new Minnesota career site to help individuals find out what jobs we have available in state government. And we launched it in July of 2014, and it has a new and improved design layout and capacity for multimedia, and we have new content. It's a helpful resource for job seekers. We have had a lot of comments from the public that they didn't know where to find anything. Everything was buried. They thought the only way you got to be a state employee was through word of mouth, or you had to know somebody in a high place in order to get a job, and they felt frustrated. So this is a way to help everybody have access to the jobs and ensure people that we want to have equal opportunity for our positions. And the next part, the next goal of ours in the new website is to have a Meet Our Employees section where we focus on some of the employees in state government. We have such diversity of occupations in our state. It's amazing. So I think people will be surprised at all that we do and all the different types of work that we have in state government. And we'll have recruiting and community events calendars. We'll have access to social media, careers, social media, and other new multimedia. And we have Facebook and Twitter and LinkedIn connected, and we have had over 1 million page views since July of last year. So successful to date. The other thing we've done is, as we've discussed, built greater community partnerships. So MnDOT had started a community advisors on recruitment and retention called MnCARS in 2007. And MMB and Enterprise Human Resources took that over to make it a statewide initiative in about 18 months ago. And it's comprised of more than 90 members and 50 unique organizations, outside and inside state agencies, to recruit and hire qualified, diverse candidates at the state. We've worked really hard in the last 3 years to build better relationships with our community partners through MnCARS. We meet with them quarterly. We do meetings where we have agencies present information about state jobs, about state programs, and those community partners then take that information and push it out to their communities, to their customers, to their contacts. We push all our state jobs out to those contacts. And it has been amazing what a difference it makes in the number of applicants we get for state positions and the diversity of the applicant pool. We have also worked with individuals in the communities of color and the communities with disabilities, and asked them what have been the barriers to state employment. Specifically, sit down and talk with us and help us understand. And people have been very candid with us and open, and said that they really didn't believe that we meant what we said, that we really wanted applications. So we took that information seriously. We have started a process of reengineering our business practices. We are in the process of a new recruiting solutions tool, application processing system, and we are changing that. People felt that they never heard if the application came in. They never heard from anybody again. We're changing our policies and our practices on how we respond to applicants. We are making the system and we're retraining the HR individuals and making sure that they are responding appropriately to applicants. So that we're actually, we want to hear what the communities have to say, and we want to make sure that we are responsive to those concerns and improve our connection. We are also renewed our partnership with DEED, and we're partnering with the Vocational Rehab Services, State Services for the Blind. We are renewing our partnership with the Workforce Centers, then Veterans Services, and Minnesota Works, so we're posting all our jobs there. We meet with them regularly as well to make sure that we are talking about the same things and making sure that they are representing our state jobs as well as the private jobs that they refer. And also we're connecting to over 500 contacts on the Workforce Community Email listserv. So we are creating a listserv where we make sure we get all our jobs out to all of those individuals as well.
Ms. O'Brien, if you could stop for a second. We have a member who has a question. Senator Eaton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question is about the hiring and screening process. I've had several people contact me whereas, for instance, in IT, if they put the technical terms down, then you have some program that screens them out because the people who put in the request for hire don't know the technical term. They put in the layperson term, so then they don't get an interview. And I'm wondering if those kind of things are being addressed.
Madam Chair.
Ms. O'Brien.
Senator and members of the committee, our new process will, with our new recruiting solutions tool, will hopefully make that more clear to applicants. They'll have screening questions that they'll be able to answer that will give them a greater field to answer specifically what those skills are, and the hiring supervisor will be able to see what they've answered for those instead of anybody just screening them out because of that. Those individuals will then go to that screening supervisor or to that hiring supervisor. In the past, when agencies got 200 or 300 applications, they had to review each one down to the bottom line of the resume, and it got to be a tedious task. So they may have missed some of those, hoping that people would appeal if they had something that they knew that they met the qualifications. And sometimes they got missed and were approved on appeal, but sometimes people just didn't appeal. I think that our new system will be better, and we might have a few kinks along the way, but we're hoping that we can straighten all that out with the new system.
Senator, follow-up? Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you. I'm hoping that it does. The specific person that I'm thinking of did appeal and did get hired.
Oh.
But it seemed like a kind of silly process. Sorry. Anyway, the other question I had was we're spending a lot of energy in the state and federal government now on the two-year programs through the community colleges, but the state is upping their requirements to 4 years in a lot of the positions. So I'm wondering about that conflict. I know that I wish I could remember the specifics, but there a lot of the positions that used to be hired with 2 year or with experience plus 2 year or whatever have now require a 4 year degree, and to me that seems in direct contradiction to everything that we're working on, especially if you're trying to recruit people of color who unfortunately are generally in the lower income level that
educational level
that get that education.
Ms. O'Brien. Madam Chair, Senator, and members of the committee, I agree with you on both counts. Silly to for the application processing. As we look at the minimum qualifications for positions, we are lowering the minimum quals as much as we think are feasible. I am not aware of any that are increasing, but I just might not be aware of those. If you want to give me examples or specifics, if you want to send me some information, I'd be happy to look at those. But we are looking at all of those minimum quals for barriers and as barriers and seeing if we can reduce them as much as possible.
Yes. Senator Pappas, I'll get to you. I wanted to follow up on this. I have a couple of examples, Ms. O'Brien. I had some members who, some constituents who talked to me about clerical support positions where the actual announcement of the position indicates that there is a requirement, but they were aware of hirings that took place that didn't meet their requirements. So it said something like, had to have a minimum of a bachelor's degree, and they ended up hiring an individual who actually didn't have a bachelor's degree but had significant experience on clerical support. My assumption in that particular case was that probably the individual's vast experience made up for the points or whatever it is that this individual didn't have a degree, a bachelor's degree. But that's an example of something that I have heard, that in certain positions, supervisors have the discretion to look at an application and a resume and simply say, well, you don't have a bachelor's degree, but I'm hiring, or vice versa. You don't even have a bachelor's degree, so don't even consider this position. So I think that that is actually a common practice. And when you say, you know, depends on who you know and who recommended you, then you get to be in that actual interview where you can say, you know, what you need to say and move to the next level. But this is an issue that I hear quite often, that it is never consistent. It's very inconsistent. Some people who don't have the credentials get higher, or vice versa. People who have tremendous credentials and they don't get hired, and somebody with minimal credentials get hired because they happen to be in the system or knew somebody.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, if the position were a classified state job, mm-hmm. and there's minimum quals stated that a bachelor's degree was required, they should never be hiring someone without the minimum quals, unless they've stated or equivalent years of experience. If it should be stated in the minimum qualifications. If not, we would consider it an inappropriate or illegal hire.
Okay.
And we should be informed about it at MMB. If it's an unclassified job, then we don't have any, typically clerical positions are not unclassified, so that wouldn't usually apply.
Okay.
If it's a preferred qualification, and it was listed in the posting as a preferred qualification, then the supervisor could decide to take someone with a preferred qualification or not. So if you just met the minimum quals and there was no bachelor's degree or degree requirement in the minimum quals, but was in the preferred qualifications, then you could hire someone without that if it was just in the degree was in the preferred qualifications. So I'd have to see what the posting looked like. Mm-hmm. But if it was in minimum qualifications, then it wouldn't be an appropriate hire.
Thank you. I think that's very helpful for us to understand because these classifications are so complex. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, we don't know the specifics when a constituent comes to us and say, we don't know if it is classified, unclassified, preferred classification. We don't
right.
know any of those. Senator Pappas.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Ms. O'Brien. How does the state treat felons? We've had a lot of discussion here about the difficulty of felons getting hired after they serve their time, and we've outlawed, we did ban the box so that they wouldn't be initially disqualified. They could at least try to get to the interview level. What's the state's position on that?
Madam Chair, Senator, members of the committee, we do criminal history checks for many state jobs and not all state jobs. But for many state jobs, and then the results of that criminal history check would be to consider that depending on the type of crime that the person was convicted of, convictions only. They can't look at arrest records or anything else. Convictions only, if it's related to the work of the position. So there has to be a connection to the position in order for them to eliminate that person from consideration. So first there would be a criminal history check and then reviewing it, and we don't always give that information to the supervisor. So the HR office typically would look at that, make a decision on whether the supervisor or manager would even need to know. So for example, if there was a conviction of a DUI, and there was no driving involved in that position, the supervisor would never know that we even looked at that or that there was ever a record found.
Thank you. Please proceed, Ms. O'Brien.
The other initiative that we are doing is youth employment and looking at individuals from schools and colleges and youth employment to help us build that talent pipeline to come into state government so that we can build a pool of candidates for state jobs. And that's a great way to showcase the state of Minnesota is a great place to work and build those qualifications needed for various career paths. So we've been very successful at using the Right Track, which is the St. Paul Youth Job Program, and the Step Up Achieve Program through the city of Minneapolis. And it provides skill development, networking, and economic support to youth who face barriers to employment, and they're both nationally recognized programs. The summer of 2014, we had interns at the state of Minnesota, and we had 11 Right Track interns and 26 Step Up Achieve interns. And this year we're piloting the Urban Scholars Program through the city of Minneapolis. And we're very proud that we were selected as Step Up Achieve's Employer of the Year for 2014 as a state. The other piece is in retention initiatives, which is important to keep the talent that we have at the state. We've developed career paths and families to help employees and supervisors have discussions with employees. One of the things I've heard over the years as an HR person is nobody ever talks to me about where I'm going in state government, what's my career. No one helps me with career development. And so we've had training with managers and supervisors on how to have those conversations, and we've developed some tools to help employees look for a career path. On our website, we've developed some tools for them to look at what those career paths are so that they can take charge of their own careers and plan their goals. We've also had an emphasis on conducting effective feedback. Again, training for managers and supervisors. In the past, we've thrown people into supervisory jobs without really good training on how to be a good, effective supervisor. And now we're offering lots of leadership training for people on how to give feedback, when's the best time to do ongoing performance feedback, and how to handle it, and other kinds of supervisory training. And a new enterprise learning management system, so we can keep track of the training that we're giving employees and making sure we're giving them the right training at the right time and giving them development opportunities, and that we're consistent and fair in offering those options for people. We've developed a competency model so that we can tie together those skills and abilities to our learning objectives for everybody, and that we establish consistent expectations on leadership critical to engagement and retention. And then again, focus on accessibility so that all employees have the tools they need in order to do their jobs. The recruiting solutions that we've talked about is launching in spring of 15. So this spring, we're working hard on getting this launched. It's the improved system for applying to jobs, screening applications, and communicating with job seekers, tracking and analyzing data so we make sure we're reaching the communities we need to. And again, we want to make sure that we keep our promise that we will remove those barriers within the system. There was no effective notification, and we now have that. They had to redo their resumes for every job. Now we have the opportunity to put as many resumes in the system as they want to. Candidates had difficulty accessing the system, or they got timed out of the system, and now we fixed that. And then we have a new career brand that's going to be integrated into the system for them. So we've talked a lot about that, so I don't need to go over that too much anymore. And lastly, re-engineering the hiring process, which has been really embraced by the HR community, the affirmative action community, and the governor's office and the commissioners of the state agencies. It's a collaborative effort, and we're looking at ways, again, to remove the barriers in the hiring process and aligning diversity hiring best practices in the new process. Affirmative action was always an afterthought, is how poorly did you do in the process, and now we're starting at the beginning and say let's integrate affirmative action and best practices into the beginning and making it part of the process so that no one feels like they have to start over or that they are backtracking. We are launching pilot programs on student workers and interviewing options to test hiring methods and determining best practices, as well as anything else we can think of that people have ideas about. How can we make improvements in the state process? We have 8 work groups working, and we have community partners sitting on all of our work groups, as well as state managers and supervisors, as well as HR and affirmative action leaders. And we are improving the reporting analysis of and hiring, and also implementing plain language so people know what they're applying for. We are reducing the barriers that we have for people with disabilities. We're changing the minimum quals. We have Ann Fehman, the state diversity director, has recently completed a project where she changed the titles of the physical requirements to do a job so that they are no longer barriers. And we used to say things like you had to sit, stand, walk, or lift 50 pounds, and we wondered, what state jobs do you have to lift 50 pounds? We don't have anybody else that has a cart. So we're changing those and saying those aren't really necessary to the job and eliminating that kind of verbiage to jobs. So we're reviewing all of those practices and eliminating those barriers. And that is an overview of the problems, the challenges, and what we are addressing a lot of them. Are there any questions?
Thank you, Ms. O'Brien. This was excellent. Yes, Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. O'Brien, you mentioned that you were selected as a step-up Chief Employer of the Year. Who gives the, who makes that award? Who does the analysis of that? Is it within the state? Is it outside the state? Is someone that has no connection with the state that analyzes what you've done and then makes the recommendation? Or how does that all come to be?
Madam Chair.
Ms. O'Brien.
Senator and members of the committee, it was the city of Minneapolis who made that decision from all of their employers. They chose us, I think, for our participation in the program.
And a follow-up to that. So we have Minneapolis, which is part of the seven-county metro area, which you mentioned earlier. The seven-county metro area has probably the largest percentage of state employees. What about the outstate? How are the communities outstate recognizing, or have they come up with, I'm sure there's probably some negative feedback to you as to why the state isn't doing such and such and so and so. Well, since you've started to implement some of these things, what's been the reaction from communities from International Falls down to Worthington, from Wilmer across, you know, you're trying to work with communities, but I haven't heard a reaction, and I haven't heard reaction from my community action in Wright County. So I'm just trying to get a sense of what you're hearing from those people that you're trying to work with.
Ms. O'Brien.
Madam Chair, Senator, and members of the committee, I can ask if there has been specific feedback from those communities, but I will tell you that all of our state agencies are participating in committees from the recruitment. We have recruitment members from all of the state agencies that have agencies in all of those communities, and they are participating on our work groups, and they are considering how these impacts will occur and what impact it'll have in their own communities and their own agencies in those areas. So I don't have specific information right now, and I can certainly ask if there has been from those communities, but I think from a statewide initiative, from a statewide impact or statewide point of view, that there have been agencies that have said they have tried some of these other tactics and ways of looking at things differently from the entire state. So I think it is a statewide improvement project.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Senator Anderson.
Follow up on that, getting back to veterans, and I know that I have a daughter that's soon to retire from the military, and coming back to the state, veterans want to go back, usually back to their hometown and their location, whether it's in Duluth or whether it's over in Fargo, or not Fargo, but the border town, East Grand Forks, so forth and so on. But I hear a lot of people saying that the climate here for economic development is not advantageous. And so I'm just wondering, you know, the veterans hiring here, you're trying to do a good job and doing that, but are there any other incentives that are coming out from you and the Workforce Center to attract those veterans to come and stay here in the state rather than go to other states where the climate may be better, or the workforce or the economy is better, so to speak, than what we have here.
Ms. O'Brien.
Madam Chair, Senator, and members of the committee, I think that we have a lot of benefits for the state. There's no particular incentives that we're planning at this point in time, but I think that in general we've the initiatives that we've been doing to attract and retain individuals. We have a good retirement program. We have retained a good insurance program. I think all of the things that have made the state a good employer, we're only improving upon. So I would say it's still a viable and great place to work. So I think we've worked hard at making sure that we retain that reputation.
Ms. O'Brien, I think that Senator Anderson brings up a very important issue. Sometimes because of the concentration of poverty, concentration of ethnic groups in certain areas, we tend to forget that in small towns, the concentration is the growth is significant, and for those areas, they are struggling as those numbers grow significantly, and they have an impact. And I think it would be very important for this committee to learn from you about mapping out your strategies, because at the beginning of your presentation, you talk about 60% of the workers are in the metro and 40% are in rural, which is a significant proportion. And I'm thinking maybe we can build on that and figure out what are some of the agencies that you're partnering, who are your partners, and how those regions need to begin to develop stronger partnerships to resolve some of the challenges, the workforce challenges that they face in those regions. And maybe for the next time that we meet, because we tend to look at St. Paul and Minneapolis, and I understand because of the numbers, but we have significant opportunities outside of the cities to really work on this. And I am very curious to see what is the department is doing, what kind of obstacles you're running into. We are now working very closely with the House to make sure that we respond to some of these issues outside of, the areas where we have more industries. How are we going to respond to the trends in the future? If young people don't want to live in those areas because there are no jobs, then we have a big problem. So we have to figure out how, Senator Anderson's daughter come here and is very excited about having her family here. We cannot have everybody in Minneapolis and St. Paul. They need to go to the communities that they choose. So I hope you can bring some of those ideas back to the committee and some proposals that we can support you to expand your efforts into areas that perhaps right now are not being targeted.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
And members of the committee, I will say that I'd certainly be happy to do that. But I will also add that we do have, in our partnership with the workforce centers, which are throughout the state, as I said, we have renewed our energies with them and work with them. And we have talked about putting our kiosks in their workforce centers so that people can apply for jobs there. I know that in places like Silver Bay, where we have a veterans home and we have other places around in greater Minnesota, around the state, that we are really focusing on getting people employed in those critical jobs, in those key positions. We aren't forgetting about those jobs, and it's critical that those jobs are filled so that we do have the right people in those jobs as well. So we are working with the workforce centers, which are placed strategically throughout the state. So I don't want to forget about those efforts as well.
Absolutely. Yeah, we want to hear more about it. Final question I have from my end, members. I don't know if you have any other questions, but I hear that you are preparing kind of a restructure of your system through which you will have applicants that may not they apply for a job, but they were not qualified for the job, but you don't want to lose track of that application and that individual. Could you tell us a little bit more about that? Because one of the issues, I think, that right now the system is not very friendly, apparently. You apply for a job, you have, this very qualified individual, but not necessarily all the qualifications for the job that this person applied, but it's a person that we really would like to to hire in another place. And there are so many openings at the time that there is a need for connecting that. Is there any work being done in that regard? I understand that you're working on that. I'm just curious as to what needs to be done from a technological point of view or something that that we need to explore to make sure that we don't lose those candidates that come in and then they don't qualify for that, but then we have, 20 openings that they could very well apply. And then you hire a person.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I I'm not quite as familiar with the new system because we're still in the development phases, but I will tell you that in the planning stages that as people can come in and apply for various jobs, their resumes and their multiple resumes will be in the system, and we will be able to redirect them to different vacancies as they are interested. And also, we do have a new recruiting position and positions that will be able to assist with helping individuals so that they can assist individuals that ask for help to say, I'm looking for other positions in state government, what might be coming available, and we'll have a better idea of what jobs will be coming up. So we're working on looking at how we can be better in tune with future vacancies and keeping a track of what is going to be occurring so that we can do what you're suggesting. So I'm not exactly sure how that's going to work, but I'm hoping that that's something that we will be able to do with the new system.
Thank you. Members, do you have any other questions? Senator Anderson.
Madam Chair, Ms. O'Brien, and in the appendix it shows different jobs that are across the state that are available. And then you have up at the top, it says R, redacted for data privacy reasons. And I see here, I just picked out one, Ombudsman for Mental Health and Developmental Disabilities. And it says employees who are veterans. And it has an R in there for redacted. Is that something that we don't have access to knowing what their status is as far as how if they wanted to as a veteran because they worked in that capacity in the service, they wouldn't be their private their information as a veteran would not be available to us as a public? I don't understand. I mean, we're looking for some statistics to see how veterans fit into some of these things, and now we're saying, well, we can't reveal that they're a veteran. I don't understand.
Ms. O'Brien.
Madam Chair, Senator, and members of the committee, when the data protected characteristics of an individual are private and we can produce it in summary form if it doesn't inadvertently identify an individual. In this case, because of the way the data is broken out, we believed that it could inadvertently identify an individual. You could figure out who that or that person was there for an veteran. That's why we redacted the information. So, yes, if it could identify somebody, we redact it. It's private data.
That would be if you say the Latina in the Senate, for instance. You would know immediately who that person is, that person's last name. These issues, because of the numbers, sometimes, you know, just the classification tell you exactly who that person is. Very complex. Any other questions, members? Ms. O'Brien, again, I am incredibly excited about all of this movement and these initiatives that are being announced in the administration. I think the executive order from yesterday was just really a very wonderful news. I don't know if members are aware that the governor announced an executive order to increase diversity in the state and has announced that this is one of the goals, and they have formed a council that include all of the different commissioners that will be actively involved in developing this plan for the state. So I think that those are very positive news, very practical steps that the administration is taking towards building a workforce for the future. Members, our next meeting will be next Monday, January 26th, and we're going to have we're going to have an overview of pensions. I really would like to encourage you to come. It's difficult information we need to absorb, and I will bring some chocolates for you so that we stay.
But we can't eat them at the table.
We.
So come prepare. If you have any questions, if you have any concerns about that, but that's something that I encourage you to attend and be here. Senator Pappas.
Madam Chair, I did have a question and a thought about our role with the executive branch and the succession planning and workforce planning. And since the Diversity Council is created by executive order and since the work that they're doing is under the existing governor, I'm just wondering about the future. You know, if we have different commissioners, we have a different governor, we have different legislators, will the commitment be ongoing? Or should there be something in statute that commits the state beyond an executive order? So I just want to suggest that maybe MMB could work with us and the chair on should there be some language in statute that kind of puts it in place so that we continue to have this process ongoing.
Senator Pappas, I think that's a wonderful idea because we typically have this, you know, these commitments of leadership from different bodies, you know, whether it's here or it's in different organizations. Different commissioners have different approaches, and now we have a governor who has announced that this is really his priority for the next 4 years. But continuing that and making sure that we are involved in that process as well, I think, is a very important issue. So, Ms. O'Brien, do you have any comments on that?
Madam Chair, Senator, and members of the committee, absolutely. I know that that is the intention or that would be the goal of the governor and the department to make sure that we have that commitment.
Senator Pappas.
So, Madam Chair and Ms. O'Brien, will there be then an agency bill on this, or should we initiate that and just work with you and consult with you?
We should work together on that, I would say. I don't know about it. I'll have to find out.
Okay.
How about that?
Great.
And Senator Pappas, as you know, executive orders are only changed if the next governor
wants to change,
change that. So, Governor Pawlenty, you know, there's a couple of executive orders that I've been working on to make sure that this governor takes action to, get away from those orders, and I have not been successful. We have not been successful. So the executive orders are incredibly important, and they continue. They have a lot of continuity. But it doesn't hurt for us to take a look into that. I am not sure that they will be pursuing that with us. It will be up to us to put something together, and I would totally welcome some ideas that we can put together as a committee to support the governor's actions and to build some continuity into the work that he does in case we have a governor who comes in the future and believes that they believe that doesn't that there is no need for that executive order. So, so thank you again, Ms. O'Brien. We totally appreciate all of this work again, and we will encourage members to continue to connect with you because we have, you know, members who are very passionate about this issue, and I am sure they will be personally connecting with you to follow up on some of these ideas.
Thank you very much.
So our next meeting is on the 26th. If we have no other questions, we will adjourn for today. Thank you, members.
Members will find out pensions are a lot of fun, right,
Alan? Oh, yeah. Oh, cool. This is much.
Good idea. Sorry. Good.